Welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host today, James Gifford, and we're coming to you on location from Mile High Agile's conference in Denver, Colorado. And today I'm joined with Tomo Watanabe.
Very well done.
And today we're going to be talking about You Might Be a Good Scrum Master If. It's kind of diving into Scrum Mastery, and you know, we'll kind of kick it over to Tomo to kind of talk a little bit more about it.
Hello, James. Let's see. So I practiced Scrum. I served multiple teams as a Scrum Master for 4 or 5 years, and I'm an Agile coach now. And over these years, I observed myself, observed other Scrum Masters, and I just started making a list of various behaviors. Those that are done by good or great Scrum Masters, and those that are done by not so great Scrum Masters. Of course, I'm looking at those from my own lens, and I started making these lists and look at them, and I'm like, there is something that I definitely can share with the wide audience. And last year, I presented a feedback solicitation technique at Mile High Agile, and also I had this idea. I used that feedback solicitation idea last year and decided to use this one, so put it together and presented yesterday, and I believe I have had pretty good reviews. Of course, people are very polite that I have not heard the negative feedback yet, but that's how I came about with the idea.
Awesome. So just real quick, like, so you're from the Denver community here. Like, how long have you been coming to the Mile High Conference?
Let's see. I moved from the San Francisco Bay Area in 2013, and I sought out for a community, and I found Agile Denver. And then through that, I learned that they do a conference. So I believe it was 2013, I was too late. So 2014 was the first year. Since I am kind of stingy and learned about that day of volunteer, so I signed up for it and got a free ticket. And meanwhile, while I was helping the conference, I was able to go to the several talks. So I started learning, and that was the beginning.
And then, now you've been kind of, are you on that path of submitting keeping your stingy and getting into to attending?
Well, so I did it last year. I had so much time, and I really enjoy the opportunity to meet speakers, including the keynote speakers, those thought leaders and practitioners. They were very valuable. I really value the connections with these folks and knowing them, and also using their ideas to do my best at work and then improve my craftsmanship. That is very important to me. So now I got used to it. I did it this year. Now I'm out of idea. So I need to put something together pretty quickly for the next year.
And that's, and that's one of those values. If I had to say, if you might be a good Scrum Master if you value continuous learning.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, that's awesome to hear that you're looking for those opportunities to figure out how to continue to educate yourself and kind of bring that into your craft. So where would you like to kind of, the Scrum Master role, the in service to the team, in service to the product owner, in service to the organization, where would you like to kind of go? Where do you want to start with some of these patterns that you kind of want to talk through around Scrum Master?
Right. First thing that pops into my head, I believe that there are either misunderstanding or practiced by people's old behavior. More often than not, I have seen command and control style in the Scrum Master. I believe that these people used to do project management, and either externally or internally encouraged or forced to take the Scrum Master role, and they start practicing. Scrum Guide talks about the Scrum Master is a servant leader. However, the true nature of the servant leadership has not been very well known, or people don't go out there and study. They just look at it and focus on the mechanisms of the Scrum framework, and they just start doing it. So that is one of the areas that I wanted to highlight. We are servant leaders, and the servant leaders do these things, but don't do these things. So hopefully I got those down during my presentation.
So, you know, it's funny. We, you know, the board, the Agile Uprising, Troy Lightfoot, you know, he's got a passion for this stuff. And he and I go back and forth about servant leadership and how it's not really taught in the two-day course.
Yeah.
And it is really a foreign concept to people. So can you talk to me a little bit about, like, what servant leadership looks like? Because, you know, there are, I mean, it's something that if you're not going out and looking up Greenleaf or Ken Blanchard does some great stuff around servant leadership. And if you have access to LinkedIn Learning, you can mm-hmm. find a whole bunch of stuff from Ken on there. So can you give me a brief understanding of, like, your interpretation of what servant leadership looks like and how maybe some places people could go to figure out how to become a better servant leader?
Thank you, James, for saying my interpretation, but because there's a possibility that I could butcher what Greenleaf and others said. To me, every individual, every human that comes together, they have their own skills, experience, and knowledge. And it's silly for not to take advantage of every piece of those things. When manager or one person goes, okay, this is the way we're going to do it, I feel that we are robbing ourselves. We need to lead this group of people and then make them a team, high-performing team, so that we are taking advantage of every single piece or puzzle piece that exists, taking a charge in gathering the ideas, thoughts, and opinions of individuals and come up with an idea that can be used and experiment short amount of time and move forward with it and then continuously inspecting, adapting. I believe that's the way to go. So in a way, this individual is serving the team and asking various powerful questions so that you are leading these people to where they want to go for the benefit or for the benefit of the corporation, companies, and the customers we are serving. That's how I look at it.
Interesting. And I think you're totally right. But in service to the team, like, what are some of those patterns to avoid around becoming too much the servant of the team, like becoming the crutch? Have you seen any patterns around that of what makes a, you know, because I think that's the opposite end of, you know, some Scrum Masters end up becoming the crutch of the team and they mm-hmm. never become self-organizing. So how do you kind of find that balance of serving the team while helping them achieve their outcomes?
James, that's a tough one. I hope I'm going to answer your question by saying this. I've been there. When I was a young Scrum Master, I did whatever that I thought I had to do to serve the team, whatever the idea I had at the time. And after a while, I realized, maybe through communication with other senior Scrum Masters or coaches, I realized that I was doing too much. Good example is, in my mind, I was thinking that I had to have everyone speak at a daily stand-up. And my go-to was, okay, I need to have them take turns and keep asking questions, the questions that other people may be interested in. So I was relying on my interpretation of what the team members needed. So I went, John, you go, and here's the question. And John said something, and I give a follow-up question and keep going. And then when he's done, I go to, okay, Sandy, your turn. And I kept doing that. And I didn't realize for a while, but it came to my senses that, holy crap, what have I done? This is a status meeting. So from that, I said, this is not the way to go. What I want is a self-organizing team. When a group of people get together at a bar for a happy hour, they don't need any lead. They start drinking. Well, that's not very important, but they start having the conversations that they want to have. Why couldn't they do that in a daily stand-up? They know what they need to do. They know what they need to converse. I don't know, but they're the ones, they're the experts. They know what information they need to exchange. So just make the purpose clear. The purpose of daily stand-up is to make a daily planning. Make that clear and then just let them be. Make the safe, make the environment as much as possible, as safe as possible so that they can have that conversation. So, yeah, that was one of many aha moments I've had in my career.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it is, you're definitely right with the whole, you know, finding that balance in the self-organization. So what are some other things that you're, from a Scrum Master standpoint, like what are some of those patterns that you see that make a great Scrum Master?
This is not limited to Scrum Masters. This applies to everybody. What I'm about to talk about is listening. I don't think it matters where you're from, which country you're from, or what your religious belief is, but we want to talk. We want to be heard. When everybody's talking, nobody's listening. When we talk, we want to be heard. To be a good servant leader, we need to be the one who listens and listens with the intent to understand, so that the people that we are talking to, they feel heard. When they feel heard, they feel safe. They feel secure. And that builds the trust and bring the people together. The trust is a very, very important piece. I could say that when the people don't trust each other, there is no way you can build a high-performing team. So a Scrum Master needs to be a role model to present or demonstrate how to build a trust. One of them is really listen with the intent to understand. I think the TVs and the radios are very bad examples because the conversation flows. There is no silence in between the dialogues. It just keeps going. And I personally think that is one of those people that, okay, that's how they do it. I need to duplicate that. I need to replicate that in my real life. So when I'm listening, I am listening to respond. So I'm not really listening what's being said. I just hear the first couple words and formulating the response and responding. And that does not help to give them have them feel that they're being heard. So the listening part is very, very important. When that happens, then I feel that I'm making a strong connection. And therefore, I feel that it is one of the many things that great Scrum Masters do, and aspiring Scrum Masters, and maybe middle to novice Scrum Masters. I want to encourage them to practice that, to get better at it.
You know, servant leadership, you know, it kind of goes back to some of that, and, you know, active listening and actually becoming an active listener. And it's another one of those overlooked soft skills that,
yep,
you know, as a Scrum Master, you need to have that ability to actively listen and then be able to, you know, kind of quickly, or, you know, figure out kind of what would be the best kind of advice for the team on that, whether it's a, hey guys, I really kind of need you to solve this yourself. Like, you have the power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should talk to, you know, X, Y, and Z person to help you get that solved. Or, hey, no, this is something that's bigger than you guys, and me as the Scrum Master need to solve that for you. But, you know, people are so quick to react to people's statements that, you know, I think listening is super valuable skill for a Scrum Master.
Now, what I want to add on the listening is that I think we underestimate how tasking listening is. So yesterday, not only I shared my topic with the audience, also I attended a couple sessions. And in that, I was listening, and I was very active in listening, and it tired me out. Also, I went to the social event, and there was a lot of listening there. So this morning on the way here, I usually listen to podcasts because that's the main source of learning for me. First and foremost, I do listen to Agile Uprising. and I do listen to many other podcasts, but this morning, I was tired of quite a bit of listening yesterday, and I knew I'm going to do a lot of listening today. So today, I just shut off my podcast. I didn't turn on the radio. I just listened to the road and engine just so that I don't overload myself. So I just wanted to point that out. If you get tired of listening, you're not alone.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, your brain can only absorb so much information, and it is very mentally taxing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is super important to figure out how to create space for yourself and learn how to kind of decompress.
Yep, absolutely.
When we get into, you know, listening and working with teams, like, what kind of behaviors do you see a Scrum Master that's doing it well or not doing it well from, you know, helping the team from a facilitation standpoint?
So one and foremost, not so great Scrum Master gets quickly excited with an idea pops out from one member of the team. And when especially the Scrum Master likes that idea, the Scrum Master facilitates so that that becomes the team's idea and decision, not given an opportunity for others to agree, disagree, and or pitching in their own ideas. So what I'm talking about is the divergence of the ideas that are being gathered from everybody in the room or everybody in the conference. I see a lack of fundamental facilitation skills in the not-so-great Scrum Masters. A question is posed so that the team members' opinions and ideas are to be shared, but meanwhile, that those questions are not well thought of. Oftentimes, it's a closed-ended question rather than open. And I feel that the outcome from that type of a facilitation is a very narrow-range outcome. We're not looking at all the possibilities and then picking the best one, or teams picking the best one to create the better results. So the first and foremost, that's what I see. The questions are not really thought-provoking, closed-ended, and then also lack of basic or fundamental facilitation skills.
Absolutely. Facilitation, you know, Troy talks a lot about facilitation. And,
oh, yeah, I've heard him talking about it, and I'm like always nodding when I'm listening to him.
It is another one of those overlooked skills that, you know, it's not taught anymore. Like, facilitation is like a, you know, it's almost a dying art that needs rekindled in our industry. Yeah. So, you know, those are all very valid points. So let's talk about the interactions with the product owner.
Okay.
Like, the Scrum Master's got to wear many hats. And can we talk about what good relationships with the Scrum Master and product owner potentially look like, or some dysfunctions that you see?
Yeah. When there is a good relationship and a partnership between two individuals, that team will see it. In and yang, they give off the energy with each other. They're in sync. That is perceived well by many. So when I say a good relationship, first thing I can think of is both individuals are curious about what each other is thinking, what each other has to say. So product owner welcomes Scrum Master's point of view in terms of how to proceed with a particular conversation. Scrum Master is curious about what product owner is thinking of in terms of the product vision or what the product owner would like the dev team to do. When both sides approach with the curiosity and exchange ideas and thoughts, I believe that they can converge much more easily and set the right tone or a good tone for the dev team to get together and produce the better outcomes. I have had the negative experience or challenging experiences with a product owner. One good example, well, the example that I think is good is it came out of the product owner's, well, I should say, I don't want to put everything on his lap, mismatch of Scrum Master's role. So he gave me a call and asked me, so, well, he didn't even ask me. He brought it up. He said, I need a roadmap. My response was, okay, that sounds good. That was pretty much the response. What was going through my head is that roadmap is to be made or organized by product owner. However, during the conversation and or afterwards, I realized that he was expecting me to put the roadmap. My retrospective, many days or many weeks after that, was that, yeah, he expected me to put together and I didn't really guide the conversation to bring the realization to him that it is his tool to put together. I just didn't have a good approach during that conversation, and what happened was him escalating the matter to his boss, and it came through my managers, and I heard about it, and I went, oh. So definitely that did not help the partnership that I wanted to really build between him and me.
Yeah, and I think we've all found ourselves in that situation where we weren't necessarily totally listening to, you know, I need a roadmap. It's like, I expect you to do it, but there is a subtle undertones of like, maybe we missed that. You know, I've always find it interesting of like, well, great. You know, I'm glad you need it. Yes, we do need a roadmap, but you know, from that Scrum Master standpoint, like, how do I partner with you to help you achieve that?
Yeah.
And you know, it's definitely those subtle things where you definitely in that case maybe missed the direction that he was expecting you to do it, and then it turned into an escalation. But you know, it's from the Scrum Master standpoint, it is, you know, how do we help the in service to the product owner? The Scrum Master is supposed to be there to help kind of shepherd the product owner and help them understand how to prioritize work and really coach them on that. Or if you've been talking to the team and the team's like, yeah, we need to really, really get some of this technical stuff done. Can you have a conversation with the product owner about like the features that they want to do? And it's like, we need to come up with that balance, that trade-off of like, for her to get that feature X, Y, and Z she needs, we need to do these four things. We need to upgrade our Java. We need to get, you know, get this SDK.
Yeah.
But it's going to take us time to install that and do some regression testing. So how do you finding that ability to negotiate with the product owner that, hey, I know we want value, business value, but we're going to not be able to totally deliver that unless we do these four things.
Yeah.
And I think we can come to a compromise so we can iteratively do it. So you still get some business stuff out of this, or like value that you want, and support the team. So I think that, you know, a good Scrum Master can start to kind of see that balance and kind of play the both sides of that. Sometimes you almost need to be that arbiter.
Right. I feel that sometimes, or a lot of times in the situation that you illustrated, I feel like in my mind, I am sitting on one side with a product owner, and during the same conversation, I put myself to the other side of the table and sitting next to the dev team. And then going back and forth, and I'm like, ah, okay, these guys are coming from this direction, and the product owner is coming from that direction. Now, I want to facilitate so that they will have a deeper understanding and building a common understanding between them. So that's where my wheel turns in the meeting and just figuring out what question I need to ask first and second. And then also intently listening what's being said. And that dynamically changes what question I'm going to ask as the fourth question. So, yeah, I got to say, it's really tiring work after I facilitate the conversation in the meeting, especially in the sprint planning meeting and the refinement meeting. I am spent. And it's okay for it to be spent because it requires that much of stamina and energy.
It does. And, you know, one of the things that I generally see, good Scrum Masters prep for ceremonies. They prep for meetings. And that's usually somebody that's kind of developed some good facilitation skills. So how do you, like, you kind of mentioned up refinement meetings. Like, how do you as the Scrum Master kind of prep for that meeting to like help make sure that it's a productive session with the product owner? Do you spend time working with the product owner to make sure that he or she's got their list ready to go for that meeting? What does your planning look like? What's your strategies kind of look like for getting like a refinement meeting kind of situated?
For a refinement meeting to go well, we need a couple things. One, we need a set of stories, depending on how many minutes you allocate for the refinement conversation. But we would like the set of stories that are ready to be discussed about. So when I say discuss, that's product owner presenting his ideas to the dev team. And the dev team has sufficient information for them to consider whether the story can be ready or not. And then also the dev team can make an estimate on how big of the effort of that story is. So I'd like to first observe if the preparation is done. Also, I observe if there are good exchanges of the information during the meeting, rather than just do the pre-meeting conversation for preparation right off the bat. I'd like to observe first, so make sure that, well, I have the list of things. So one of them is the preparation is done and the team is available to do the to have the conversation in the refinement meeting. What else? Maybe those are the two main things that I can think of right now. And then I observe. If any of those things are not presented during the meeting, then I would get into a coaching mode. Of course, I don't want to be selling too much, so approach the product owner with a set of questions. These are the things that is great to prepare. And this is what I observed. And the impact was blah, blah, blah. That I would like to expect that a product owner goes, oh, okay, I totally get that. So next time, let me try this and then let me know how it goes. It's not always simple and smooth like that. I make the comparison between my checklist and the reality, and then I decide how I'm going to approach the situation.
Now, do you find yourself using like a definition of ready or things like that to help teams? Because we, you know, at the end of the day, the refinement meetings are there to get enough understanding of the work so that you can take it into sprint planning and mm-hmm. kind of hammer out those final details. So, I mean, do you use a definition of ready as part of your Scrum Master practices? Do you get like a set of teams or, you know, individual teams or even maybe a product level kind of definition of ready?
Yes, but I approach it in this way. One of the things that I stand close by is that, me, myself included, we don't want to be told what to do or how to do. When that happens, people resist. I resist. So rather than say, hey, you guys are not doing the definition of ready, and this is what it is, and we need to do this. Rather than that, I prefer to ask the team, in order for you to accept the work or the story for you to take on, what are the criteria do you have? Look at to say, okay, I'm ready to work on this. I believe I have just enough information to get going. Okay, tell me what it is. Let me just write it down on the whiteboard. All right, that sounds good. Anybody else? And then next thing you know, you have a list of the things. Then I might sneak, it might be sneaky. I might say, why don't we call this definition of done? And then next time, you don't have to make a list. The list is already there. And then you can rely on this tool to say whether you have all the things that you think you're going to need, or you can declare that, yeah, I'm ready to take this on. So that would be the approach that I would prefer.
Awesome. Awesome. So kind of we'll kind of circle around to the in service to the organization. So what do you find from a Scrum Master's, like a good Scrum Master should be able to, at some point, reach a point where they should be able to coach Scrum to people in the organization to build that awareness to help, you know, the teams progress. So what are some things that you find in that space for, you know, that like good patterns or bad patterns around kind of the Scrum Master in service to the organization?
Good and the bad patterns of what Scrum Masters do to serve the wider audience in an organization?
Yeah.
Okay. One bad pattern is maybe this. Allowing the people to say or operate based on the status quo. I believe that all the Scrum Masters, not only they are servant leaders at the same time, I believe they are change agents. So along with the Agile Coach, I believe the Scrum Masters are change agents. And when we see something is dysfunctional, then we need to pay attention to it, examine it, and explore what could be done differently or what we as a Scrum Masters can do differently. And have a courage to approach whoever may be to share ideas and also listen to what they have to say. But I believe that, well, I have seen there are quite a few people, quite a few Scrum Masters that either they have way too much on their plates or maybe lack of courage, and they feel that they don't have time or space or permission to have a conversation about it and just let that status quo operate us. Yes, it is a really hard thing, and I'm not immune to that. I'm one of those people who need to really put more fuel into my courage so that I can have this healthy conflict with others. But it just needs to be done.
It does. And, you know, building healthy conflict within the organization, you know, it's tough to find that balance. It's tough to call out that functional manager or manager that's just getting too involved with the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you're hovering and it's being a distraction.
Yeah. And many things go into that factor too. Reputation, emotional states in others, what may come up, whatever that may be afterwards, after you have the conversation. All those things are all entangled, and it does control what we want to do next or what we want to do at that time. So I'm not going to say this is a simple thing. It is very, very complex. It's hard to do. So like I say this to many other people, but I tell myself all the time. So one of my self-talk, the word I use is experiment. Just try it and see what happens. Another thing, keep believing and doing it, is ask for forgiveness rather than asking for permission. I live by that.
Huh. Well, sometimes you need to take that risk, and sometimes it blows up in your face, or sometimes it's super successful.
Yeah, been there, done that. That has happened on my face.
Huh. Well, so Toma, we really appreciate you kind of coming and hanging out with us while we're here in Denver. If people would want to get a hold of you and continue this conversation with you about Scrum Mastery, or you know, you might be a good Scrum Master, if how could they get a hold of you and kind of continue the conversation?
I am a somewhat active user in LinkedIn. Please look me up with Tomo, T-O-M-O, Watanabe, W-A-T-A-N-A-B-E. And there are a few other Tomo Watanabes out there. So look for a lot of letters that follow my name. CSM is one of them. So I'm there. And also I am I use Twitter. Twitter handle is at Tomo Watanabe 6 being just the number 6. So you can reach me there also.
Awesome. Well, you know, on behalf of the Agile Uprising, we really thank you for making the time to come hang out with you. It's always awesome to have one of our listeners on the show, as well as, you know, just get some different voices from people in the field. Everybody, if you're like us on iTunes or Stitcher, it helps us be more easily found. And until next time, this is the Agile Uprising signing off.